A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven,
in time
concentrate on
space.
Sin. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display, I eventually had to go down to the cellar.
That's the display department.
With a torch. The lights are probably gone. So had the stairs.
Yours is number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 335. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and this time we are talking about The Children of Greenough. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello. This is a BBC children's television series from 1986, quite a short one, just 4 25-minute episodes, and it belongs in that BBC category of being an adaptation of a sort of classic children's book, the first of a series of books, and it's got a certain amount of period charm and all sorts of things going on in it, Brian.
Yes, absolutely. And it has a mixture of ghost story type elements and also time slip, time travel type elements as well in this sort of period drama. And of course, we know that period dramas and adaptations of novels are things that the BBC does very well.
Indeed they do, yes. A long notable history of them, and we'll be talking about a few along the way, I think.
For sure. So the setup for this, a young boy is sent to spend Christmas with his great-grandmother in an old family home called Greenough. His parents are working abroad in Burma, which is now Myanmar, and he doesn't know that he has other family he can go to until he gets a message about this great-grandmother.
That's right. And so he's told at school that he's going to spend Christmas with her, and then he's shipped off in a train to a flooded part of the Norfolk Fens. And we get a little bit of sort of backstory filled in by two ladies on the train talking about the flooding and so on. And then he, next thing we know, he's at a train station, he's being picked up in a car, and then has to make the final part of his journey across these floods by boat, where he will visit, or he will arrive at, this old house standing on a little raised bit of land surrounded by floodwaters, Greenough. And once there, he'll start to hear some stories. He'll, you know, stories by the fire, stories at bedtime, that will fill him in on some of the strange history of both the house and, I guess, his own family history, Brian.
Yes, that's right. And this does have a bit of a classic ghost story setup feel to it, where the main character is going to somewhere remote they haven't been before, and the journey is more and more difficult and has to use different ways of getting there, and this going by train, but in the end having to go by boat to the house, sort of fits into that idea and that tradition, I think.
Yes, it does. It's, yes, very much the being sent away from school tradition.
And the more that he is learning about this house and the history there, the more he senses the presence of other people.
There are spooks and mysteries to be solved.
Absolutely. So getting into the character, Toesland, or often called Tolly, played by Alec Christie, is a young schoolboy who is traveling alone from his boarding school to this remote place. And we believe this is maybe set in the 1950s.
Yes, that seems about right. And he does seem to have that typical post-war English schoolboy. He's in short trousers, the grey school jumper, and the sort of thick blazer as he travels through this flooded landscape. And of course, he's on his way to visit Mrs. Oldknow, his great-grandmother, played by Daphne Oxenford, who most famously was the voice of Listen With Mother on BBC Radio for 20 years. But she was also, she turned up in Doctor Who, I think the year after this production, she would turn up as the archivist in the Doctor Who serial Dragonfire. And she is Mrs. Old No. She is full of stories of the past. She's quite delighted to have this young family member visit her for Christmas. And she fills him in about some of the history of the house and the history of the family.
So her telling stories in this, I guess, would be familiar from her telling stories on Listen with Mother, correct?
Absolutely, yes. Who could you have as a better voice to sit down and tell you a story?
That's great. That's perfect. Bogus, played by George Malpas, is the gardener and handyman at the house at Greenknowe, and he comes to bring Toseland there by boat, and he is the only other person, the third person who is there and is really there at Greenknowe.
And then, of course, we've got the titular children of Greenknowe. We start with Linnet, played by Polly Maberly. She is one of the mysterious children of Greenknowe. She is a child living in the time of King Charles II, sometime in the 1660s. So we see her obviously in period costume when she appears. And as I say, she is one of the title characters, I guess.
Yes, absolutely. As is Toby, played by Graham McGrath, who was also called Toseland, but this one is Toby rather than Tolly. And he is a musician, and we see him playing a type of flute or recorder, and this is something that comes into play, and the music in this family is important.
And then the third child, perhaps the older brother of the three, Alexander, played by James Trevelyan. Again, you know, an older son in the 1660s, very much looking the part of, I suppose, a sort of fairly well-off family's child with his rather fabulous jackets and frilled collar and cuffs.
Yes, we get some nice period dress mixed in with this, which is quite fun.
So Tolly has journeyed into the Norfolk Fens. We've mentioned he's this very typical sort of British idea of a boarding school child, as I say, in his short trousers, his blazer and jumper. We think it's set in the early 1950s. That's the sort of look of it. And as we'll mention in a minute, that fits in with the time when the novel came out. And he is a child that's used to a certain isolation. His parents live and work abroad. He's at a boarding school. It's very much implied that just about all the other boys from the boarding school have already gone home for the Christmas holidays, and he's facing a sort of solitary festive period at the school by himself when he gets surprised at this announcement that he's going to be sent away for Christmas.
Yes, he doesn't have any friends there in Norfolk, so the idea of the company of these children of Greenknowe, these sort of ghostly echoes of children, however you look at it, is something that is exciting and that he delights in. And Mrs. Oldno is also glad to see him and interested to see if he will see any of these children from the past, of, you know, these ghosts or these bits of time travel. And he also gets to sort of have this new grandmotherly like figure as well,
which he's, yes, he's delighted with. She's delighted with his presence. You know, I mean, they get on very well. It's a nice pairing in this show. She, of course, is full of stories, but also, as you say, Brian, she's got this interest. She seems to know that the presence of a child in the house will cause these sort of echoes from the past, the ghosts or the time slips, however it works, which we'll talk about in the next episode. So, yeah, she's quite sort of interested in what he's going to witness as she fills him in with her own stories of the past.
Yes, and we do get that feel that, yes, he is seeing these children in a potentially ghostly way, but he is also visiting their world in a way that does feel much more like a time travel kind of thing. So it is sort of a blend of things, which is quite interesting.
We see ghostly apparitions in the house in the time period that Tolly and Mrs. Oldknow are in. But we also, as you say, Brian, Tolly seems to visit the children while they're playing back in their time in 1660s. Plus, we get some sort of scenes from the past where we get filled in on some more of the story of the family and what's going on. So there's sort of various different elements and ways that the past is portrayed in this show. And we get to know a little bit more about the children's sort of, in a way, tragic history. And it, we sort of learn that they died in the Great Plague, which puts us in about 1665 to 1666. So that's rather sort of sinister and unpleasant. And then, of course, although this show is full of sort of charm and good cheer, there is also a slightly sinister presence lurking in or around the House of Green Knowe. And that is the old Green Man or Green Knower himself, which is a rather mysterious element we'll get into again next time, Brian.
Yes, he's sort of like a cursed figure that may have some malicious intent towards Tolly. And we see him as like a sort of green grouping of plants that look like a person and maybe is a person sometimes. And there's something a bit spooky there.
Some mysterious stuff in the House of Old Green Knowe.
Absolutely. So let's get on to our production notes. The Children of Green Knowe is based on a series of 6 novels by Lucy M. Boston, the first one being The Children of Green Knowe from 1954, and the final one was The Stones of Green Knowe, which came out in 1974. So these were coming out over the course of about 20 years. And one of them, book 4, A Stranger at Green Knowe, actually won the Carnegie Medal in 1961. So these definitely were a big deal.
They were indeed. And we know that she based the House of Green Knowe on her own home, the Manor House at Hemingford Gray in Huntingdon, Cambridgeshire, not all that far away from me here, Brian. And the original book includes illustrations by her son, Peter Boston, which included rooms from the house at Hemingford Gray, some of the toys that were in the house. All of these things, which interestingly, you can still see if you visit the manor house at Hemingford Gray. In fact, not only is it open to the public, it also makes quite a bit of its connection to these books and the TV series. So there's a certain amount of interest in Lucy Boston and the books, and you can go and visit the house where it was written, which is rather interesting.
Yeah, that's fascinating.
And we know that the first book of the series was purchased for the BBC by producer Paul Stone, a chap who's also produced Box of Delights, Moon Dial and the Chronicles of Narnia series for BBC, all of which we've covered. So yeah, quite a pedigree in producing these sort of interesting adaptations of children's books.
Oh, absolutely. And Stone recruited a young American writer, John Stadelman, to adapt The Children of Green Knowe for television. And it's actually Stadelman's only IMDb credit, so he didn't do a lot of work on television, but he did do this. His first draft was actually rejected by Lucy Boston, the original novelist, because it added too much sort of Hollywood-style action and that sort of thing. So he did a rewrite that focused more on the quieter moments and the solitude of the place and the stories that were being told by the fireside or at bedtime. And Lucy Boston approved of this version. So he did write the version that they would use.
Goodness knows what the Hollywood action version of this would look like or be like, Brian. But there you go. Interesting that, you know, Lucy Boston had some creative control or at least some input on the screenplay.
Yes, that is always interesting to see when that happens.
And the series was directed by Colin Cant, who also directed Moondial, which we've just mentioned, but also would direct the very early Russell T. Davies series that we've also covered, Century Falls and Dark Season. So again, he's got a bit of British Invaders pedigree. And they took their production, at least for the exterior shots, they found their own version of Green Knowe at Crow's Hall, a 16th century manor house in Suffolk. So appropriate enough, fits the time period perfectly. Although they did have to do, obviously, a fair amount of set dressing and some visual trickery to make it look like it was surrounded by floodwaters, or because this is set at Christmas, there were scenes set in, you know, the snowy landscape outside the house, the snowy gardens. I think there's a little bit of that sort of soap sud type stuff they use to recreate snow at times in television productions, Brian.
It didn't look bad. Certainly the house itself looked great. And the approach to the house by boat also looked great. And for the scenes that were set in the 1660s and in King Charles II's court, the BBC costume department and wigs and makeup and so on, they did their usual type of work with their usual high level of skill and quite a good look there, as we would come to expect with period work from the BBC.
Yes, the BBC costume department, they never fail when period settings are required, and they do marvellous work here.
And the sort of ghostly special effects and things that we get like that are used quite sparingly, and I think they're effective. They work pretty well. The music on this was composed by Peter Howell, who had recently finished his run as series composer on Doctor Who at this point. He is, among other things, well known for writing the new arrangement of the Doctor Who theme music that was introduced in 1980 and used for about 5 years as the main title music for Doctor Who.
Interesting stuff. It's great to see some of these sort of, creators from other shows that we've covered popping up on the Children of Greenough.
Oh, absolutely. The Children of Greenough was broadcast on BBC One in a pre-tea time slot from November 26th through December 17th of 1986.
And that may be it. We're not sure if it was repeated. I haven't been able to find any details from that. We know that it was shown at the BFI in London in 2009. But it may be it's one of these shows that was sort of fondly remembered from the time period, that certain Christmassy charm. It's in the same sort of landscape as Box of Delights, which again we'll be talking about, I think, next time, Brian. But if there were any repeats, I haven't been able to find details of that.
Yes, I don't think it was as high profile or as well remembered as Box of Delights, but it does fit into a similar category.
Okay, so if we've whetted your appetite, let's tell you about the availability of this series. Here in Region 2, as ever, it's nice and straightforward. There is a 2016 Simply Media DVD, just the 4 episodes, no bonus features, currently going for about £10, you'll pick that up for. As far as I can tell, not streaming over here yet, although it wouldn't be possibly a good candidate for BritBox, I suppose, but we don't know if it's anywhere to stream at the moment. That's the situation in Region 2. As ever, in Region 1, not quite so straightforward, Brian.
No, there is no release in Region 1, and this, I think, would be an import. I don't know if this was broadcast internationally at the time or not, but I have not seen much of anything about it internationally around. Worth noting, the original series of books are all still in print.
Yes, and still popular. So, yes, you can find out more about them by reading the books. As ever, we haven't, but, I'm sure some people tell us they are exceedingly good.
Yes, a lot of the things that we look at that are based on books are from things that are out of print because they were not hugely popular, and very often books do go out of print after a few years. I believe the majority of them do. So it's notable when we find something that is so popular and well-known as a book that the books are still available and in print decades later.
So come back and join us next time. We've got some more to talk about with the Children of Greenough. We're going to tell you a little bit more about the legends of the house itself and the family, and we'll sort of fill you in on some details of how this sort of particular ghost story seems to work on television.
And we will also talk about the fascination of stories with children being sent away from home. Ghost stories and other things. But that is something that seems to come up quite a bit.
Absolutely. And we'll review and recommend the DVD box set that we're talking about. So as ever, plenty of stuff that we've hinted at to talk about when we come back.
Yes, indeed. Until then, you can find all of our episodes at BritishInvaders.com. Or if you search for British Invaders on Facebook, you can join our Facebook group and participate in some of the discussions we have there, which are always fun.
Or come along and participate in the fun at the Voice of Geeks Network, where British Invaders is a proud member. Find out more at VogueNetwork.com.
Absolutely. So thank you for listening. And this is Brian from Canada signing off.
Yes, thank you very much. Until next time, it's Eamon in England also signing off.